College football nerds here talking Ohio State and Penn State. Ohio State fans, it's glad to see you back. Penn State as well. For those of you who decided to come out and listen to us talk even after taking the tough loss on Saturday, a few housekeeping items. One, first, you got homework. And that homework is, if you're not a subscriber yet, hit that subscribe button. That helps us out so much. And we get a lot of people watching these videos, watching our live show, and they're not subscribing. But so if you want to help this channel out a lot, subscribe. And then if you like this video, share it somewhere. That'll help us out. Second piece of homework you got, give us your score prediction in the comments below, and we'll get down there with you and talk about it. Tell you how you're wrong. You can tell us how we're wrong as well and what we missed, what person on the depth chart that we didn't talk about that made you mad. And finally, that live show is something that y'all definitely should check out. There's a huge Big Ten presence on that show every Saturday night. We're talking about games while they're happening. We were talking about the Ohio State game while it was happening Saturday night. There's a replay on the podcast. It's a couple hours long, and also you can find it on our YouTube channel. It'll be linked in the description. All right, Josh, housekeeping out of the way. Let's talk Penn State and Ohio State. And like the first thing up front that I think is worth pointing out, this is a 12.5-point spread, I think, in this game in favor of Ohio State. We're probably going to pick Ohio State in this game, but I want to talk through the details of it because that's where things get pretty interesting or can get interesting. We were mixing it up before the show, talking about, you know, some angles on this discussion that we could have, and one of them was the defense. And so what I would like for you to talk about is, namely, like, if there's a path for Penn State to win this game or keep this game close, it's got to be through that defense, right?
I think so. So when you look at the Big Ten and their defensive statistics right now, Penn State leads the Big Ten in pass defense. They've given up 5.2 yards per attempt, 55% passing, 4 touchdowns to 9 interceptions. Really, really crazy numbers out of Penn State defensively. Now, it's worth noting the entire Big Ten has good defensive statistics. No team in the Big Ten has allowed more than 8.5 yards per attempt on average. Now, you can have, I think, an unsolvable debate on whether that means that the passing offenses in the Big Ten just haven't been able to strain anyone, or if that means the passing defenses in the Big Ten are good across the board, but that's just where we're at. The notable thing for Ohio State, I think, is if you look at who they've played so far, Minnesota, Rutgers, Maryland, Indiana, those teams are all ninth or worse. Rutgers is the worst pass defense in the Big Ten statistically. Maryland is 12th. Indiana is 9th, actually tied with Ohio State, oddly enough. Minnesota is 11th. So the only one they haven't played at the bottom would be Illinois, you know, aka the team that just beat Penn State. And that, I think, brings into focus one of the big concerns. Ohio State is about to play, in the next 5 weeks, all of the top pass defenses in the Big Ten. Penn State is number 1. Wisconsin is number 3. Michigan State is number 4. Purdue is number 5, tied with Michigan, who is also number 5. So when you consider sort of the gauntlet they're about to run, and then they're starting with the toughest opponent, and they're coming off a series of games where they've played teams that are all, you know, at least statistically relative to the rest of the Big Ten at the bottom of the pack, I think it does raise into question whether or not Penn State might be able to shock Ohio State a little bit in terms of the quality of their pass defense. Because it is going to be a lot better. Like, probably a lot better than what Ohio State's faced. The problem with that is the other thing I said, right? You know, the one at the bottom of that list is Illinois. And why does Illinois have the record they have? Well, it's because the pass defense gets given lit up. And Penn State couldn't exploit it. So Penn State needs to make this a low-scoring affair with Ohio State. They can do it potentially by limiting the pass. Potentially. I'm just saying we don't really know how that's going to play out. But there's still a lot of other factors that have to go their way to win, even if you take that into account.
And the flip side of that is Penn State's not a great run defense. They're a good, not great run defense. I think they're around 38, 39 nationally. Auburn had success running the ball on Penn State. I talk about Auburn because that kind of neutralizes the circular consideration for statistics with Ohio State or Penn State or anybody in the Big Ten. If you talk about an external data point, I think it's worth noting good and bad for Penn State. Good, man, they held Auburn, I think, to 5 points. Bo Nix, I think, threw for 4.7 yards per attempt, which is, that's a good number, right? The flip side, though, you got Trevion Henderson on those side who's really coming into form, and C.J. Stroud being the guy that we thought he maybe could be preseason. He's coming into that. So, Josh, we don't talk a lot about this is a non-statistical, non-tangible thing, but I want you to touch on it a little bit because there's a lot of concern about Penn State coming into this game with motivation. And I would point to Texas A&M coming off a loss to Mississippi State and turning around and beating Alabama. Do you feel like motivation and the ebbs and flows of motivation for teams that aren't completely decimated is more of a fan thing than it is an actual team thing in terms of showing up and affecting the game week to week?
It's definitely a thing that exists, and teams have good weeks and bad weeks, and there's games where teams just come out flat. Personally, I think the motivation ebb and flow thing tends to be more about whether or not you're playing a team that you think is a worthy opponent, how excited you are about playing that team in particular. But a lot of what people see with momentum, I think usually is kind of more the result of two things. One, changes in opponent quality. Ohio State, we have not been critical, but we've been mildly skeptical, I'll say, because their improvements have come in a stretch where they're playing like Tulsa, Akron, Rutgers, Maryland, Indiana. Some of those are among the worst teams in the country. Like Akron is bottom tier bad, and the other Big Ten teams I don't think are particularly good, even though, you know, there maybe was some thought they would be, but I don't think they ended up there. I think sometimes we mix the two a little too much. And yes, there are trap games. Those are real. Like the Nebraska game potentially could be a trap game for Ohio State coming off Penn State. But I think that's a little more about playing a tough opponent that isn't super highly ranked. So you're not motivated that week. I don't know that it really matters where it comes. I think it does matter that you just practiced really hard. You're beat up a lot of times, and the players are a little exhausted. So yes, it exists, but I think it exists more in one-offs. I think it exists in specific situations, and I think those situations can be moved around in the season. If you talk about like three-game slumps and four-game slumps or a team that's on the rise for 4 weeks, a lot of times I really do think that has more to do with level of competition and matchups and that kind of thing, easier, tougher parts of the schedule. And then we as fans, I think, have a tendency to see patterns because it's human nature to see patterns, even where there's really maybe not a pattern. Maybe it's just the fact that there's 12 games and you're going to have some, you know, some random ups and downs in there, even if it was just 12 sets of dice rolls, right?
So we didn't do a formal review of the Indiana game, and, you know, I don't want to look too much into the final score. But I did say going into the week that Indiana has a decent defense. I think they have some scaling issues, kind of like Arkansas you mentioned, where if you can out-athlete them, you really can put up a number. But, Josh, what we talked about going into this Indiana game was maybe this is an opportunity for Ohio State to show us that the offense is more than just a product of who they've played being bad defenses. And what I wanted to see was more – show me you can do something against a decent defense, because we're acknowledging Indiana is that. And Josh, I think we kind of got it, because two things can happen in a game like this. One, you can have a game where the other team is so bad offensively that they're throwing pick sixes and they're giving you the ball on their 20-yard line all day. But if you look at Ohio State's movement of the ball, their drives where they scored points, it's 75 yards, 57 yards, 56 yards, 66 yards, 75 yards. Josh, isn't that like a really good sign that it's more than just playing bad teams, that the offense maybe is putting something together if they're driving the ball this much?
It is. I think you can, you know, we do this a lot, right? You can suss out positives and negatives in any game if you really set your mind to it and try to dig into things a little bit. One of the big sort of axioms for our channel has always been this idea that you can't look at win-loss records. You can't even look at base statistics. You actually have to drill down and say, okay, what teams did you play to get these statistics? It's why the model that we're going to show in a minute is entirely based off opponent quality. Like, it's entirely relational. It's about how good your opponents were, how they did against the teams they played. And everything we do is weighted on opponent quality. And I think if you don't consider that, and you don't consider the situations you're in, you lose a lot of the nuance. Yeah, Indiana had a good defense, and they had been effective all year. And it's true, like, when Penix Jr. went out, the past couple weeks, their offense has been just miserably in the tank, right? I mean, Jack Tuttle threw for 188 yards against Michigan State, and he did it on 52 attempts. That's 3.6 yards per attempt with two interceptions. And so even the day that Ohio State had where, you know, they gave up only 41 yards, it was actually more yards per attempt than Michigan State had given up to Tuttle. Now, there were multiple quarterbacks, the yardage built up, but I'm just saying I don't necessarily take a ton from Ohio State's defensive performance because Indiana is in total implosion mode now that Penix is hurt. But you can take something from Ohio State's offensive performance. I do think, you know, to your point, the long drives, long sustained drives are telling. The prevalence of explosive plays are telling. I think long term there is something to the fact that if you look at Indiana's possessions, right? Second, they had one long drive, and I always throw out the first couple drives because they're one or two drives because they're scripted, and a lot of times you'll see a team look good on those scripted drives. But then Indiana goes three and out, and they go four plays in a safety. Then they go three and out. Then they go three and out. Then they go turnover run downs. Another short drive, three and out, three and out. When that starts happening over and over again against a high power offense where the defense is just going right back on the field, things do snowball. So I think there's a lot of positives to be gained from Ohio State, but there's also a lot of stuff with Indiana where I think they're in such a bad spot that I'm not shocked it was 54-7. And I do reserve, again, a little bit of judgment to see how Ohio State does this game against Penn State.
Let's see if the model reserves the same judgment as you.
So, yeah, and he's saying this because he's already seen the model. Our model, for those that hadn't watched before, it's simply a opponent-based model that tries to calculate how your game is going to go based off, you know, your strengths and weaknesses as a team. And then based off sort of your team's unique characteristics, it builds a scoring model that's actually unique for each team and then matches those up in this particular matchup, produces a score. And this one, it has Ohio State 42, Penn State 22. That's a pretty sizable differential, almost doubling up Penn State. One thing I'd sort of bring people's attention to would be this percentage of opponent averages allowed. That's a sort of an intermediate statistic I generate. I don't like necessarily use it per se, but the statistic's something we kind of spit out with this relational data, and it tells you, okay, relative to your competition, are you holding them above or below their averages? And I think the interesting thing there is that Penn State and Ohio State in both sides have some statistics that are a little more average than you'd think. Ohio State's allowing 94% of opponent passing averages. Penn State's allowing 95% of opponent rushing averages. This was a point you made earlier, right? That Penn State's rush defense isn't great. And we often say 90% should really be considered average because you've got those out-of-conference sort of cupcake games in there, and that gives you about a 10% bump in all your stats, or it should. You know, those games are stat-padding games. But outside those, these teams have really been giving up averages. The one advantage Ohio State has had is that they're solid against the run. They're not great. 84% is not great, but it's solid. Penn State at 81% against the pass is really the one defensive mark in this game that I can say is a good mark. It is hard to hold teams below their passing averages. We rarely ever see that number get below 70% against the pass. Plenty of teams hold you to 50-55% against the run a couple a year. So Penn State's pass defense is a little bit of an inhibitor here, and it's the only real break to Ohio State making this a total bloodbath, frankly, in the model. It has Ohio State about 8.7 yards per attempt. But otherwise, across the board, you basically have a Penn State offense that's probably going to get some drives, especially scheming and RPO. That's kind of what the model's seeing. Like, they'll put some stuff, but the final stats are not going to be pretty. Like, 3 yards per carry, 6 yards per attempt, maybe a couple things here and there and a couple busted plays. And then Ohio State basically just sort of runs their offense. So as far as our model is concerned, looking at how these teams have played relative to competition, it sees Ohio State as a highly explosive offense, but actually pretty average defense. And it sees Penn State as a much more average defense than you would think, but a good pass defense and a really not great offense. And it just doesn't think that even if Penn State has an average day, that they really have any hope of sticking with Ohio State because of just the explosive scoring potential that Ohio State has in this game.
And I think that the model makes sense to me, and I'm going to do my score in a minute, but I want to talk a little bit about sort of the strategy here for Penn State, because there may be an opportunity, and the one thing that I want to see from Ohio State is scoring efficiency, where we saw earlier in the year, like, they were putting up a ton of yards, but not having the requisite points that should go along with it. I'll be interested to see if Penn State can hold them to anything they want within the 20s, try to force field goals, when the field gets compressed, and really just kind of live and die on trying to hold them to threes and shortening the game. Do you think that's a strategy that Penn State can employ here, or is it that they're not a great running team, so that really kind of limits them?
It goes back to something we've talked about for a few years now. The most effective style of defense against these high-octane RPO passing attacks, particularly passing attacks that have first-round draft pick receivers, is to play coverage through between the 20s, or at least until about the 30, between the 20 and 40-yard line. The reason for that is the only way to effectively defend the RPO schematically really is to go into man coverage. If you're in zone coverage, because they're able to read the zone, that's kind of the way the RPO is built, they're going to just light you up. So teams either drop a ton of guys in a zone defense where you have so many zones that you can't quite make a single read. There's too many guys floating around, and at least you make the tackle. That's the like Arkansas approach, in a little bit what Iowa's gone to actually. Or you play man coverage with safeties over the top and you just never get beat deep. But if you do the man coverage look and teams can really spread you to where safeties, maybe have to have man coverage responsibilities because there's so many receivers in the field, then if you got a guy like Olave or Wilson, they're going to get one-on-one man coverage opportunities, and those are going to often turn into touchdowns. That's why high-end receivers tend to be the spark that causes this RPO scheme era stuff to get explosive. And I think if you're Ohio State, you've got to play the bend but don't break. You cannot let Olave and Wilson get behind you. You almost have to concede in the open field where I've got to defend the length of the field and my safeties have a lot of ground to cover. Keep the safeties way the heck back. Let them catch it underneath. Try to tackle them. And then when you get into like the 30-yard line where the field gets compressed and now the safeties don't get beat deep, right? You can't go over the top. Once that threat's not there, you can contract. That was the Northwestern approach. And the thing I will say is if you're doing that, you're going to drop your safeties back. You're going to drop your coverage back. You're not going to have many guys in the box. So Penn State is probably going to get gouged by the run if they take that approach, just like Northwestern did against Ohio State in that championship game. But the whole trick is if they can buckle down and play them straight up between the 40-yard line and hold them to field goals. And if you hold them to enough field goals, then maybe you're in a potential to win the game. But I personally think that's the only viable strategy for Penn State, and really the only viable strategy for almost anyone against an offense that has the explosive potential that Ohio State has. It's going to put up gaudy run stats. It's just a matter of keeping the pass stats and the runs. It's the Oregon approach, frankly. Let them have 600 yards of offense, but try to get enough red zone stops to where that yardage doesn't actually turn into points.
The only way that works, though, is if you can get some points yourself, and that's where I have some concern. Northwestern is a good example. Also, Ohio State fans will remember Wisconsin. I think it was 2019. I think I remember they played them twice. And both times, Wisconsin was giving them a game early. This may be consecutive years and I'm getting confused, but giving them a game early with this approach, but they could not hold, the dam couldn't hold long enough because they just didn't have it offensively to capitalize on Ohio State taking a minute before they started scoring. Because you look up and it's the third quarter and it's like, 13 to 14 or whatever, and you've played a good three and a half quarters, but at some point the dam will break. And if you haven't been taking advantage all this time with your own set of points, then you're not going to win the game. I think that's how this game's going to go. I think that early on, Ohio State might be a little sleepy. And might not get, because they will get shocked a little bit with how good Penn State's defense is. Good offenses find a way to figure that out, make adjustments. I've got Ohio State 38, Penn State 20. Tell me where you're at on a score.
I've got Ohio State 37, Penn State 13. And I think this game might take a little ways to get going, but we're on the same page. I don't think Penn State has the horses to keep up with Clifford now that he's been banged up. Has and that offense just don't seem to have anything. Like that overtime game, and maybe this is a point to talk about it. That Penn State Illinois game was painful, wasn't it? I mean, I don't know another way to say it, and I think a lot of Penn State fans are gonna have to agree with this, right? It to see teams repeatedly being unable to get 2 yards, like four overtimes in a row before they finally scored on one of them, was insane. And you are, even if you really restrict Ohio State, the thing we say all the time is elite offenses are virtually impossible to keep under 35 points. I don't see how Penn State can get 35 points. And if Ohio State starts getting up 2 or 3 touchdowns to where Penn State now starts counting possessions and saying, well, we're not going to completely stop them and we got to start scoring, we've got to open things up, that can quickly snowball the other way because you've got to get aggressive, and aggression turns into turnovers, turns into negative plays. And I think it's tough. I mean, I've drawn the ire of a lot of Penn State fans this year because I have been something of a doubter of Penn State as a top 10 team, or particularly a top 6 team. But I've never thought they were a bad team, and I think people have a hard time with that. Because of where the expectation was, I was taken as being overly critical because I've always said they're a team that's probably fairly around number 15 in the country. And now I think the reaction after that Illinois game is that they're a terrible team. And I think that might be the reaction if Ohio State beats them the way they think they will. But I think the problem for Penn State is they have to be in games where the other team can be held under 30 points. If they play, and this was always my thing with them in the top six, a lot of those teams in the top six are some of the few teams that can actually score, like really score on you, on good defenses. And I don't think they have the offense to run with that kind of crowd. Even though the Penn State defense is very good on a national level, the offense is just too anemic. And I think that's what ends up getting them in this game. And I think at some point it just kind of runs away from them. I'll end with this. I mean, my big takeaway, if that happens, is really going to be, does Ohio State have to lean totally on the run, and how much can Penn State really limit that explosive passing game? I don't care what the score is, but how does Ohio State go about achieving that score? Do they have to just bully run Penn State that maybe has some weaknesses with a run game? Or are they able to pass the ball, despite whatever Penn State does to try to stop them from doing so?
Yeah, I mean, Penn State, Iowa, Kentucky, these are some of the same teams. Very good defensive teams. Fringe top 10, top 15 type teams. You know, if Sean Clifford's still healthy, then Illinois beats the number 3 team in the country last week, and Penn State drops to, 11th or 12th if he was healthy against Iowa, because they would have won that game. So the way we look at this team is a lot in the way we look at Kentucky. And we said when you lose 30-13 to Georgia, there's really no shame in that. Like, you can still be considered a good team, even a fringe top 10 team, with that kind of result. So I don't want Penn State fans to get too down on this game. If they don't win, it's the last game that they need to be frustrated about. All right, y'all. That's it for us on Penn State and Ohio State. Let us know in the comments what you think the score is going to be. And don't forget to hit that subscribe button to help us out a ton. Thanks so much, y'all. Have a great week, and God bless.